to invite up our next speaker, Jacqueline Carey from Cal Poly. And her title is Legacy of Lead Paint Use and Its Impact on Soil Contamination at a California University Campus. So let's give her a warm welcome.
Thank you. Hello, everyone. I want you to start off by imagining a situation where you walk into your kitchen or your bathroom and you turn on your shower, perhaps the faucet, and this rusty brown water starts spilling out of your faucet. You'd probably be very shocked, disgusted, and very concerned. So this situation was real for the residents of Flint, Michigan in 2016 during their water crisis. In that time, 6,000 to 12,000 children were exposed to high levels of lead in their drinking water due to an improperly managed water source. And this can be very problematic because lead is a cumulative toxicant that is absorbed through the blood and body tissues, can be stored in the teeth and the bones, and pose some serious health risks for humans. But it is especially detrimental to children because of its effects on your nervous system and brain development. And this can lead to issues in children of reduced IQ, behavioral changes, and a reduced educational attainment. And serious lead poisoning can lead to mental retardation, coma, and even death. So for these reasons, it's very important to monitor our lead levels in our water sources and in other sinks as well, such as soil. Throughout the course of the presentation, I'm going to give you an introduction, state my objectives, go through materials and methods, our results and discussion, as well as a conclusion. As I mentioned before, lead is a cumulative toxicant that can be absorbed in through the blood and body tissues and pose some serious health risks. It's commonly introduced into the environment through mining, smelting, recycling, and manufacturing processes. And the two most common sources of lead contamination are leaded gasoline and lead-based paint. And our study focused on lead-based paint as a source of lead concentrations in soil. So the use of lead-based paint was banned in 1978. However, we have many structures still standing that have lead-based paint on their exterior. Through processes of physical weathering, the paint can chip off and flake and reduce in particle size and settle onto the soil and then become incorporated into the soil through a process of a chemical weathering. Mainly its interaction with water that will put the lead into a form that is bioavailable to humans. When I say bioavailable, I'm referring to the form of lead that can come into contact with the body and enter the circulation and have an active effect. So our objectives were to assess lead levels in soils in proximity to building foundations across California Polytechnic State University's campus. We also wanted to determine both bioaccessible and total lead concentrations in soil using two different extraction methods, and also to assess the influence of building age on soil lead levels. We began our sample collection with a group of my peers, and we sampled from 26 locations across the college campus, two of which were lawn locations indicated by the bright green dots, and the rest of the dots are color-coded by decade of construction. So we did, as I said, we were focusing on the influence of lead-based paint as a contaminant of soil. And so I just indicated here the points that are expected to have low lead concentrations due to either their remoteness from buildings or the fact that they were constructed post-1978, post the ban of lead. And you can see that largely our study focused on buildings constructed pre-lead ban, lead-based paint ban. We collected our samples from the south side of the buildings. This is presumably the drier side here in our northern hemisphere, where soil is more likely to become airborne, inhaled, and ingested and pose a hazard. We sampled within 1 meter of building foundations And this was partly due to some research done by Hansen and Jelinski in 2016, where they monitored lead levels in urban soils and found that the concentration of lead in soil occurred within 3 meters of building foundations. We shrunk that down to 1 meter because we often encounter obstacles when you go too far out from the building foundations. We collected our samples from both surface and subsurface to assess the mobility of lead downward in the soil profile. Surface samples were collected 0 to 5 centimeters depth, and our subsurface samples were collected from 10 to 15 centimeters depth. We then crushed and sieved our samples and allowed them to air dry overnight. And next we performed our extractions. So the first extraction was a bioaccessible extraction. We used Malix 3. We used this instead of the EPA's Relative Bioaccessibility Leaching Procedure, or RBALP, because that procedure can be expensive and hard to access. And we determined that Malix 3 was a suitable proxy based on some other research done by Shannon Plunkett and Douglas Soldat in 2016. The relationships that we were concerned with are in this red rectangle here. We have relative extractable lead versus added phosphorus. They use this phosphorus as an addition because it's very effective at sequestering lead into a form that is not bioavailable. The orange line indicates the RVLP extracted lead, and our yellow curve is the Malix 3 extracted lead. And based on this, we can see they're very similar relationships. And so we determined that this would be a good estimator of the RVLP. Malix 3 extracting solution is a mixture of acetic acid, ammonium nitrate, nitric acid, ammonium fluoride, and EDTA. And we prepared our samples by mixing 2 grams of soil with 20 milliliters of Malix 3 extracting solution, placing it on a reciprocating shaker for 5 minutes, filtering it through a 0.45 micron syringe filter, and analyzing it on the ICP OES. The next extraction we performed was that for total lead, and this is the EPA's 3050B method. This is the standard technique used by the EPA for total lead estimates, total soil lead concentrations. We mixed, to prepare these samples, we mixed 1 gram of soil with 10 milliliters of 1-to-1 concentrated nitric acid to deionize water. Place these samples on a hot block digester, seen here, for 2 hours at 105 degrees Celsius. We then diluted the samples with water and filtered them through a 0.45 micron syringe filter again, and then analyzed these on the ICP-OAS. And we got some very interesting results. This here shows the correlation of surface to subsurface soil lead concentrations. And this is the total lead concentration. So we can see the surface samples being on the top, that the highest of our lead concentrations did occur in the surface, with the exception of this one anomalous value here. This was taken from Heron Hall. It was constructed in 1927 and is the oldest building of the sample sites. So this was the highest concentration we obtained, and we associate it with either leaching or mixing. But aside from that value, we can see the majority of the highest concentrations do occur in the surface. And this is very important to assess when you're considering the portion of the soil that humans are likely to come into contact with. If we're concerned about hazard, we want to know where that contact is going to occur. And also, we want to assess its mobilization downward, because if the soils require remediation, you need to know to what depth remediation is required. This shows the relationship of bioaccessible lead to total lead. You see a 1-to-1 ratio line is the black dashed line. Below that we have the relationship that we saw between bioaccessible and total lead. And this is the best fit line for our data points. And it shows a relationship of about 1-to-2 bioaccessible lead to total lead. And this can be a very useful tool if you have access to a total lead extraction, perhaps, and not bioaccessible lead extraction. So you can make these predictions. So if you have 200 parts per million lead, total lead in soil, you can use this relationship to predict that about half of that, or about 100 parts per million, would be bioavailable, at least for our soil types from where we sampled our soils. This shows the correlation between total surface lead levels and the year of construction. In the very bottom, we have our soil background concentration of 10 parts per million. This was determined using the lawn samples that I showed you on the map from areas. These areas were remote from building foundations and therefore expected to have little to no anthropogenic influence. Above that, we have the time period when leaded gasoline was used. The orange line indicates the time period when lead-based paint was used. And then at the very top, we have the EPA's soil screening level of 400 parts per million. The screening level is determined by the EPA to be the level of lead in soil that poses a risk. And we can see that all of our samples were well below that 400 part per million screening level, which is good. I divided our data set into two populations based on the year of construction of the buildings. So I have pre-1978 and post-1978, and that average is 48 parts per million, 48.5 parts per million, and then we have the two buildings that were constructed post-1978 with an average of 12.9 parts per million, which is very, very close to the soil background concentration. Granted, this population is very small, so we could not determine a significant difference between the two. But you can see just by looking at the graph that the highest concentrations occur in the time span when lead-based paint was used. Okay. So the objectives of the experiment were to assess lead levels in soil in proximity to building foundations across California Polytechnic State University's campus. We wanted to determine both total and bioaccessible lead levels in soil using two different extraction methods, the Malic 3 for bioaccessible and the US EPA 3050B for total, and then also determine the influence of building age on our soil lead levels. And we concluded that there is definitely a correlation between lead-based paint and higher levels of lead in soil, and also that the soils across our campus do not pose a hazard according to the EPA screening level of 400 parts per million, and therefore require no immediate need for remediation. Thank you all for your attention. Yes.
So your data in the pre-1978 had quite a bit of variability. The lead levels were higher, but there was a lot of variability. Could you talk about other factors that you think might be explain that variability or might play a role in that variability that
yes.
you saw?
Yes, absolutely. I think a lot of it has to do with whether or not lead-based paint was actually used, because on California Polytechnic campus, we have buildings that weren't necessarily painted, but they're made of concrete and they're made of brick. And so we didn't take those factors into consideration when we took the samples. So we were not entirely certain if, you know, the paint was even there to have added to lead concentrations in the soil. That's something that we could do in the future to actually hone in on the influence of lead-based paint, as opposed to just assuming or associating buildings with before the lead-based paint ban with that leaded paint. Yes.
So you were speaking about the difference between the surface of the soil and what you think of the soil, and you analyzed 12 or 14 centimeters deep.
The subsurface was 10 to 15.
10 to 15,
mm-hmm.
Which is not that deep finally.
Mm-hmm.
Did you try to go more far from the building to see if there is some leaching of your lead, which might
We did not. Did we go further from the building to assess leaching horizontally?
Yeah.
We did not do that. We were more concerned with the downward mobilization. And as I said, it was hard to collect samples too far from buildings in areas where there were obstacles like sidewalks. So we didn't do that.
Okay.